Hello and welcome to another episode of Linux Lads. This is season 7, episode 14. You probably have noticed that Shane is not introducing this episode. He's not here. He's off gallivanting with his girlfriend somewhere or something like that. So he won't be long for this, but hopefully he will be around for the next one. So this one, it will be more of a newsy episode. Amelis, you've been trying out a budgeting SaaS project called Actual. I've never actually heard of this, and I was poking around, and it seems to be quite good.
Actually used to be a software as a service product, but the developer, I think he got kind of burned out on maintaining it and running it as a business. So it's actually gone fully open source. And you can self-host it yourself on whatever infrastructure you like. So I've been running it for the last about a month and a half, using it for tracking all of my personal income, expenses, and budgeting. And it's been really pleasant. At the moment, there is no way to use it on mobile. The developer used to have a native Android app and a native iOS app, but in the process of burning out, he doesn't really want to maintain those anymore. And I think the community is focusing on making the web interface more responsive. So you can also use it from mobile, just use it, loading it in your browser or whatever. And yeah, like I said, it's been really pleasant so far. It's the only budgeting system I've actually been able to stick with for an extended period of time.
It can be very subjective. I have to admit that I'm absolutely terrible at finances. So anything that makes that more seamless and easier to understand is a lot is good in my point of view. So I've never actually used this in its previous incarnation. And I'm not the biggest hosting all of the things person. So I don't have a VPS where I have self-hosted four or five different things. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying this is my own view. So I probably will be not very likely to use this, but it actually looks good.
There is a, if I remember correctly, it is packaged as an Electron app, so you can run it on your, just like install it as any other desktop application, but then you don't get the multi-device synchronization type stuff. You'd only be able to use it from that device unless you also run the server.
And there a lot of those, if it's on your computer, then what if something goes wrong and you have to nuke and pave? So I don't know if it just goes to a database file or something, and could you move that database file to your own cloud infrastructure, if you have a web dev or something like that that's already attached to you could just say, oh yeah, point at that instead, and then if you have to, something goes wrong with your computer and you have to nuke and pave, and then you can always just reset it up and say there's your pre-existing database file. So
what is it on the back end then? Is it some kind of a complicated setup that includes a proxy server, PHP, MySQL, and stuff like that?
It's just a Node application. It doesn't, I don't think it requires a database or anything. It's just Node.js. And it does require a reverse proxy.
So you install it, why did you install it using, is it a Docker file or is it a, is it a container, or did you install it using just NPM? And
I just used NPM. Mm-hmm. But you can also install it through Docker.
NPM is scary always. When you install something through NPM and you see vulnerability, and then
8,236 vulnerabilities found.
19 packages are asking for funding. Great. Mm-hmm. I think I'd rather not know this.
Yeah, don't tell me that.
Mike, Adobe is buying Figma, and you have some alternatives.
Right, so not there any alternative. So let me start. So everybody knows what Adobe is, our most or least favorite maker of creative tools, at least for me. I just don't like them. I have nothing against proprietary software, but it's particular software. Run it for 5 minutes and your fans just go haywire on a decently spec machine. It's not a nice, I mean, from at least for me, and I'm not an artist or anything, but just from the point of view of running their software, most of the things that I've ever come across that they did were just horrifying. So yeah, they are buying Figma, which is a neat web-based app, or you can also install it locally. But basically, if you have a team that needs to collaborate or designing interfaces, that's the way to do that. At least if you watch like YouTube videos, how do you make a web application? How do you make an application? A lot of them basically just say, okay, use Figma, design the interface there. It has got a lot of super helpful collaborative features and stuff like that. Now Adobe are buying it, so I mean, it's just not just my feeling, it's the general feeling it's going to go to shit from a lot of people. Luckily there is an alternative called Penpot that I haven't had the time to test yet, but at least for my simple needs it might be actually enough. Amolis, you have a son?
My employer actually uses Penpot quite a lot. We do some collaborative design with some UX designers, and they actually enjoy using Penpot. So
okay,
we do have a little bit of experience with it, and it's a good alternative.
Yeah, so the I think Penpot is open source, unlike Figma. Of course, Figma was a fully commercial product, or it is still a fully commercial product. It's so good that Adobe are splashing out $20 billion for it. I don't know why, actually. How can software be so expensive? But it's $20 billion in cash in stock. Yeah, whatever. I'm not a CEO of a major corporation, so I can't. I don't have to make such decisions. So I don't know how they arrive to that sum. But whatever. Good luck for the people who are cashing out on it, because yeah, if I make something and Adobe made me, you know, if I make something, I don't care. Adobe, Oracle, or Beelzebub himself came and gave me $20 billion for it. Yeah, I'll take that. So there is an alternative, and it made me think about things that I use that are services that I don't, that are usually very proprietary, that I came to love and rely on, and if they go away, I might be quite sad. So just a very short list of two or three things. There is an app that a lot of people use called Notion, which is like supreme documentation and note-taking. It's like, I don't know, 15 or 10 years ago, what was it called? Evernote was the shit, and everybody was all over that, right? Notion is like this, but for the new decade. Unfortunately, of course, you can't self-host it. It's a commercial product. So if that ever went away, there is a open source alternative called Upflowy. It does not have as many features, but I think it's getting there, and it's getting the basics of it right. That basically a note is a bit of a database behind it, and you can have different views and different notebook, and a lot of functionality that relies on you just typing very simple keyboard shortcuts, right? So it's really hard. I'm describing it poorly. It's, if you really want to know what it's about, try one of those, and it's amazing. And Trello, that I used for uni a lot. Again, I think there's plenty of Kanban boards, but the focal board by Mattermost looks really nice, especially like for teams that already use Mattermost. Or as I think Amolis put in Kanban as well, which you can self-host yourself, basically. I think I've looked at it before. But if you need to host some of your functions, as I mentioned last time, but I think it kind of bears repeating, data.sh is a replacement for the Heroku, who's dropping their free tier. But it is a bit of a reminder that things might be taken away quite fast, both the Heroku situation and the possibility of what Adobe is going to do with Figma. So, I've already heard some people saying yeah, no, I don't care that it's still the same. I'm not in the business of giving Adobe any money. So it is what it is. But there are alternatives.
Something in the back of my mind, and I was trying to do a web search while Mike was talking there, is a free and open source GUI design application. And I heard it, or I saw it being announced, or there was a post about it on OMG Ubuntu about 6 or 12 months ago, and for the life of me, it began with A, and for the life of me, can't forget, remember the name of it, nor do I remember, or nor do I know how much progress they've made, because at the time of the post, it was like, this is like alpha quality, guys, do not rely on this, but like you might be able to do something with it, and like there will be, it was kind of early days active development, so I don't know how stable it is or if that project still exists or not, but yeah, just well, Mike
Akira, talking about this, you're thinking one. About Akira?
Yeah
It's in the Ubuntu repos, so I assume it's still alive. The difference between Akira, I think that was mostly like for GTK, but I may be wrong about that. Basically, yeah, I have never tried it. The crux of it in terms of like maybe using it instead of Figma, I don't know what about the team like collaboration features, you know, if it had any, I don't remember. And it still says in the Ubuntu repos that, or in the Ubuntu Software Center, that this is a, well, there's a warning somewhere, still under development and not ready for production, missing features, random bugs, black holes opening in your kitchen are to be expected.
I was able to, once I found out the name, I was able to look it up, and on their GitHub, it seems to be a lot of like 13 months ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. There is one commit that was 2 months ago, so but I it seemed to be kind of little minor things that are, so I'm not saying that it isn't in active development or that the state that it's in currently might be a perfectly usable and workable state, and they only need to make minor adjustments. But yeah, it's so also something to check out if anyone is listening and would like applications of like, or as a application designer or a UI designer, and would like to check out any of these applications.
Connor, do you want to talk about Komiku? I think that's how you pronounce it.
it's a free and open source manga reader for Linux, and because I'm absolutely, I know very little about Japanese culture, and I know very little about Japanese pronunciation, I was going to go with Komiku, or Komiku. We'll say Komiku for the sake of this, and anyone who knows better Japanese pronunciation than me, feel free to yell at me on Twitter or something like that. But anyway, this caught my eye because of late I have been thinking about comic books, not necessarily manga, just comic books in general. I'm a big, or certainly in my teenage years, was a big fan of 2000 AD, who are the British comic publisher whose most famous character is Judge Dredd. If anyone is familiar with Judge Dredd, that is 2000 AD. So I was actually on their website and saying, oh, when I subscribed to a digital version of their comic and like download it onto my computer or have a handheld device that I'll be able to like subscribe to them and then get the latest issue or whatever. So this caught my eye. And then when it installed it, it's very well designed, but it's very much manga orientated. from my brief poking around at it, it doesn't seem to be that you can poke it at a local, I think it's .cbr or something like that, which is the kind of the comic book container file. It doesn't seem to be that you can poke it at local or point it at local storage. It seems to be that they're like, oh, well, these are the sources that we have available, like what manga would you like to subscribe to, that kind of thing. It seemed to be it was pointing you at online sources rather than local sources, which might be, if you're into manga, might be what you're looking for, but it seemed to be very focused on manga, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but wasn't really what I was looking for. So alternatives, if you don't read strictly manga, I have found a link that recommends some really good comic book readers for Linux. And one of them that I downloaded was M Comics, which is very simple, lightweight, is not necessarily doing the whole lib ad wadia thing, where it's all really focused on the GNOME look. So it seems to be quite cross desktop environment from that point of view. And had nice features, like it said, do you want a manga reading mode? So if you're into manga, maybe try out M Comics as well, because it will run all of the things. So I have a link in the show notes here of various different comic book readers, and pick whichever one would suit your needs in terms of design and how actively they are developed. So yeah, I don't know if either of you guys would be much of comic book readers.
In that list, there's one of the other potential applications is called Foliate, and I have used that one. It is one of the more libadwida focused applications, so it really has that GNOME aesthetic. But I personally like the GNOME aesthetic, and I found that one a really pleasant reader.
I think I might have installed it from in the past for I think it does ebooks, not mm-hmm. necessarily. So I think it can do both. So that's
good. It does all of them.
All right. Amleth, you have the simplest and most pleasant RSS reader that you've ever used, and it's called Yarr.
Yes. Yarr is yet another RSS reader. One of those acronym, yet another names. But I have really enjoyed using it. It's literally just a single go binary. Everything it needs is packaged up in that binary. You download the binary, you execute the binary, you stick a reverse proxy in front of it, and you have a whole RSS reader. You add your feeds, they can refresh every 15 minutes, 30 minutes, hour, 2 hours, whatever. There's a light and a dark mode. It gives you folders you can put stuff in. So I've got a folder for all of my news aggregator services like Lobsters and Slashdot. And it actually has a mode for when you're viewing, say, a Lobsters post. Lobsters posts are like, they link to the original article, but the content of the Lobsters RSS item is just a link to the comments page. Does that make sense to you two?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay. Yarr has a mode where you can fetch the contents of the link. So rather than in your RSS reader, all you see is that link to the Lobsters comments page, it actually fetches the destination article so you can read it in your RSS reader without ever leaving Yarr. And it has the readability mode, so it strips out all the extra advertisements or whatever else might be there. And it's really pleasant.
There's some things that I actually will not only read the article, but I'll read the comments as well. And OMG Ubuntu is one of my go-to examples where I will read, skim through. Sometimes I'll just skim through the article. I'll get the main crux of the article, but then I'm actually interested in what the comments are saying down below.
And Yar has keyboard shortcuts, so if you want to, you can use HJKL Vim bindings for navigating through your folders and your news items.
But Mike then is if old. You
if you want to open one like the for those lobster posts, if you don't want to read it within Yar, you can just hit the O key and it opens that link in a new tab. So then you can like read the article on the website and see all the comments and stuff like that. It's really simple. It has all the features I like and none of the features I don't need. And that's why it's become my RSS reader of choice.
And when I was looking at their GitHub, they said, oh, like, I'm sure for someone like Amulet, it's like, it's trivial, but they're saying, oh, to install it for Linux, you have to do this and you have to... I think it was like there's the Mac instructions and that, so it download this and then extract it and put it into this folder. And then I was like, I wonder, is it in the AUR? Yes, it's in the AUR. So if it was to install it, then that's the method I'm using.
Interestingly, it says Windows. So it's all the instructions are the same for all the operating systems. Basically, download, unzip, and drop it somewhere where it's in your path, whatever it is for the particular system. Or on Windows, just unzip it and run it. But it says on Linux, download Yar Windows, unzip it and place Yar in home local bin. I wonder if there's a mistake or if they are using some kind of a Windows binary with packed in Vim, with packed in Wine to run it. Probably not. There is a specifically named Linux binary, so they have a little typo in the documentation on GitHub.
Yeah, I think that's a typo. I didn't build it from source or anything. I just used the binary on GitHub when I was setting it up.
Yeah. It's basically the Windows way of making, so of installing software or running software, just download, unzip, and run.
Mm-hmm. That's part of why I really like self-contained Go applications. They're really simple.
Yeah, you get a binary, but then you have a ton of binaries, and how does it, if you download it out of a package or without a package manager, how do you update it? Do you rely on the updates?
You add the release feed to your RSS reader,
yeah,
and then you repeat the process the next time. It's of course best to get it from your package manager, but out of all the ways you can self-host stuff without a package manager, I prefer this.
This is becoming more and more common. Like you see, what I usually see is like Linux and macOS use Cargo or NPM or something. Windows install WSL, use Cargo or NPM, right? Oh, I'm joking, obviously. But usually what I'm seeing more and more of is install applications using the platform appropriate or, programming language appropriate package manager rather than the distribution package manager, which, it's good and bad. I mean, we've been talking about this actually a few times before on this show, but I can see how it's good and I can see how it's bad and
my goal for all the applications I am writing and plan to write is getting them all in repositories or distribution repositories. So not necessarily flat. With me as the maintainer, but with someone else as the maintainer, because I think that second set of eyes on every release is very valuable. Yes, it slows down your release cycle, but I think that second person auditing what you're doing is really valuable for the end user.
So you want to package everything, Amulet, for using someone else as well. That means no Flatpak, for example, probably no Snap. No AUR as well, unless you can find it.
I do want to put it in the AUR because it's there, but it would be really good if it was moved from the AUR to the official repositories by someone.
And you don't see the same path for a Flatpak, so is it why you wouldn't choose Flatpak? Or
I personally don't really care about Flatpaks or Snaps or any of those.
Right. And what if somebody decided that they will put it into Flathub for you?
Cool.
Yeah, no, I'm just
That's thinking... a second set of eyes on it.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I just wondered, like, how much the second set of eyes actually does. I'm sure, well, depends. Probably depends on the application.
It depends on the maintainer, too. Yeah.
Just press into it's okay button. Oh, that'll be grand button.
I agree.
Yeah.
So I came across a interesting article on itFOSS recommending some Firefox add-ons. I don't actually use Firefox currently, but I'm not as my main browser anyway. I'm not necessarily opposed to Firefox in any particular way. It's just I'm currently using Vivaldi, which is Chromium based, and you know, evil. Chromium based, but I tend to enjoy it. I like some of the features that it has, but I could certainly be convinced to go back to Firefox, and this could be going on a way to convince me. So number one and number two are two that I've used before. I'm no longer on Facebook, but when I was on Facebook, the fact that they said Facebook could be tracking you on other websites, so we're going to basically wrap it in a container and tell it to not be bold and stop tracking you. So it's very useful if you're still on Facebook. Don't know why you still be on Facebook, but if you are still on Facebook, it keeps it in its own little bold naughty corner in the corner of your browser. So there won't be any leaks or tracking outside of that. So that is very good. uBlock Origin, everyone should install uBlock Origin. It's an absolute godsend.
The web is unusable without an ad blocker like uBlock Origin.
It's like, if anyone wants to do an experiment, they only need to go to a particularly ad heavy website. I'm thinking off the top of my head, just go to IGN.com. Go to IGN.com with the uBlock Origin installed and see the numbers just creak up. You just see the for the amount of stuff that's blocking the background. And it's for that, in that instance, it's actually quite real. Reassuring to see the numbers just tick up. Bitwarden is something that we use actively, and I use personally for keeping track of all of the things. Everyone should install a password manager, and Bitwarden is free and open source, so automatically gets my vote. Language tool, I've been using that for way back in the day for when it was I think it was even was it suggested or recommend like it was a suggested add-on or recommended add-on for OpenOffice back in the day. So that's the reason why I came across it in the first place, and it's good to see that it's still actively developed, and it's great alternative to Grammarly, which is a curse upon the internet. So if anyone finds Grammarly useful, I recommend Language Tool.
I've been using Language Tool for the last year, and I've got it integrated with Emacs, with Vim, with my browser, with LibreOffice. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, Connor, you recommended it to me some while ago, so I've been using it, and it's making me realize that before I started using it, the way it, so it, you know, I often have to reply to customer support tickets, or often yeah. Like once.
I use it at work also.
Yeah, for a week, every month and a half or something, I take the support round. And when I installed it, I realized how many mistakes in my previous emails there must have been, you know, spelling and punctuation. Because suddenly you type an email in a hurry, getting all the facts right, obviously, and then the language tool just underlines everything that it thinks that you wrote wrong, and it's actually pretty good. Like, you know, this is not your 1990s spell check. It works very well.
I have heard it. I mean, I don't find it this way at all. But I can understand the argument. People say, "Oh, well, if you use such a tool, then it's going to make you lazy, and it's actually not going to cause you to improve your language at all because you become reliant on the tool." I actually find the complete opposite. The more I use it, the more I'm finding, "Oh, I'm it's corrected me on this thing that I do commonly." The more you correct it, the more it'll stick in your mind going, "Oh, that should be there," whether it's putting in a comma or something, or the fact that I consistently will misspell a particular word, and then it'll subconsciously go into my back of my mind going, "No, that is not how you spell that word. This is how you spell that word."
I have a very strong opinion on anybody who requires spelling and grammar to be correct, because it destroyed my childhood, literally. As a Czech person, I have to learn a language where the requirements for prop-like writing, and I'm using the word prop-like just to annoy people, irrespective of how nice they might be. Irregardless of how nice they might be. You have to spend about 3 years of your earliest age at school just learning a bunch of words just to be able to write Y or I. And it doesn't differ. It doesn't make a difference in spoken words, so you can't hear it. So if you can't hear it, you shouldn't be forced to be able to write it, right? There's just a small, tiny little thing about the language, which is basically through the school system. It's a horrible thing, and it shouldn't be. So, yeah, I'll use language too, just not to offend a customer. But, like, I don't want to be able to spell properly just in order to satisfy someone's Nazi tendencies. Like, it's a language, it's a living thing. And if you have to pressure kids to do something that they don't feel like doing only because you think it's the right thing, because it's heritage or history or something we have together, you know, a national thing. Especially in English, which is the common property of every single person on Earth by this point, right? So if you have to do that to satisfy yourself, I'm sorry, you're wrong. And, you know, I should apologize to all of my teachers and everybody, because I do have this thing. So, yeah, I use it because I feel obliged to, because people get offended when I don't. But I don't want my language to get better. I'm perfectly capable of spelling correctly, actually. And if I put my mind to it, I can differentiate even the stupid things that I can't actually hear in English, being a second, you know, not being my native language. I can differentiate between thing and V and W if I really, really want to. But, you know, if you understand me, if I write something and you know what, and you get what I mean, then the job is done. It doesn't have to be pretty or super correct, yeah?
I mean, I 100% agree with you, except for the fact that it's aluminium, it's not aluminium. So shots fired.
But that's something you say, right? So and it's spelled, the same, right? You spell it with a U. You don't spell it either.
It's both are spelled the way they're pronounced. So aluminium will be aluminium, or aluminum will be aluminum. So yeah.
Do you often solder the aluminium? Because there's another thing that you over there pronounce differently.
Say solder and solder.
Do you say it with an L or without an L?
With an L.
Interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's British English, and British English would be. It's not what I mean. I hate even calling it British English, but I suppose they invented the language, so we'll have to give them that one. But so former British colonies like Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, Canada would have more of the British influence in their language than. So Aussies will say aluminium, for example, and they say footpath rather than sidewalk and those kind of things.
Except for the former English colony of the of the current United States.
We like to be contrary.
Anyway, we're not going to go through each individual part of this of these recommended Firefox add-ons, but just to let you know that some of these are, like, it's a very well compiled list. Some of these are genuinely look like they're pretty handy. So I would recommend checking out the list. We've only gone through the first like two or three or four.
One that I would add to that list that's not listed is just the generic Firefox containers extension. Facebook container is based or uses the multi-account containers, if I remember correctly. But I use multi-account containers for everything. I've got a container for personal stuff, for university, for work, for my business, and it's fantastic. A lot of people use like multiple browsers to be able to be signed into one multiple, like for example, Google accounts at the same time. You've got your work browser that is your work Google account, and then your personal browser that is your
I do that all the time.
Multi-account containers fixes that, so you can just have it all in one browser, and I heavily use that every day, all the time.
For me, my chief complaint for not using Firefox, and I've probably voiced this opinion on the podcast, I'm sure I have, and I've certainly explained it to Mike as until I'm blue in the face, is the way, and it doesn't seem to do this on Windows that I'm aware of, but it's just the way it does updates on Linux is that, okay, it will update silently in the background, or you'll get a notification going up. There are updates, and you're like, yeah, that all of that is fine. Click apply, and it goes off, and it, put in your pseudo password. Yeah, go off and do the updates. I'm doing something at the moment. And then part of that might be a Firefox update. And then you're like, okay, I'm on this thing. I want to open up a new tab. Firefox needs to restart in order to update. I'm like, that literal thing is like a paper cut for me. And one, I mean, part of the Dublin Linux community is we do virtual meetups, so we'll use Jitsi. And on more than one occasion, and that's the reason why I refuse to use Firefox when I'm on using Jitsi, is I will have the Jitsi call in one tab. As people are talking, I'll go, oh, I've never heard of that piece of software before, or I've never heard of that before, or they might be talking about something. I'll just look that up on Wikipedia. New tab. You must restart Firefox. I'm like, I'm in the middle of a Jitsi call. I can't exactly just restart Firefox. So then I'm barred from opening up a new tab and doing a quick web search on the side. For that little thing is what prevents me from using Firefox and on Linux. Fix that, guys.
Every single Firefox user I know despises that behavior. I hate it. It happens all the time. So I agree with that. I can understand that.
I'm using a Chromium-based browser purely because of that. And I enjoy the Vivaldi features as well. And I've used Brave in the past. And I also enjoy Brave. So Vivaldi, Brave, nothing against them. I enjoy their feature set. In an ideal world, I would not be using something that's Chromium based. I would be using something independent like Firefox and stick it to the man and everything. And not saying that I would be any way disadvantaged in terms of feature set or add-ons or anything like that by switching to Firefox. Firefox has millions of add-ons, and pretty much anything that is an add-on on the Chromium side also is an add-on on the Firefox side. For the vast majority of the cases, there'll be some exceptions for obvious reasons. That little thing is so frustrating and has prevented me from switching to Firefox.
I wonder how it's behaving on the Snap, when it's a Snap, because when you have a Snap in Snap applications, obviously when you have when you get notification from the software center saying you have to close Telegram because it has to update, and for some reason there's a time like 13 days to expire or something like that. If you don't do anything, it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't update, right? So maybe with the snapped Firefox, it could work the same way, because it would be the Snap subsystem catching. Okay, Firefox needs to be updated. We need to close, and we are running Firefox. Maybe we can close Firefox first. We notify the user before it even gets to the horrifying Firefox updater. I'm not sure. I'm guessing. I'll let you guys know if and when then. that
happens.
I mean,
all they have to do is see exact same behavior as it does on a Chromium-based browser, which is, let's say, I'm using Vivaldi as an example because that just happens to be the browser I'm currently using. So I'd, from all I understand, and I'm sure this is the case, but I can't be 100% certain, is in that exact scenario that I was describing, that Vivaldi has an update and runs in the background, the update doesn't apply until I close the browser and reopen it. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with temporarily using the previous, air quotes, the previous version of the browser, as long as I can function and do my thing. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done with that, close. And then the next time I open it up, it's updated.
Mm-hmm. On the topic of independent browsers, the developer or the creator of Serenity OS, are either of you familiar with that?
Nope, I don't think so.
Serenity OS is a from-scratch operating system developed as a hobby project originally by one guy, but then he quit his job and has been developing Serenity OS independently for at least a year. I think it's been a couple of years. But he recently announced a new cross-platform browser that he's working. It's not usable. It won't be usable for a while, but it's really interesting because he's doing it completely from scratch. It's rendering engine, JavaScript, CSS, everything. It's a really cool project.
Is that the guy who had like addiction problems, came back from rehab and decided he needs to something to occupy himself, so he made an operating system that has got the aesthetics of like when he was younger, 1990s computing and that kind of thing. So yes. Simple, cleaner, super fast.
This is that guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I mean, he shows that he can deliver.
Not to be confused with the Temple OS.
No. It's not the same. It's not, no. this person, I'll get his name and put it in the show notes, obviously. I'm not sure what, I think he, Serenity OS is completely from scratch, right? It's not like Windows and it's not like Unix, I think.
That is correct. It has a custom Unix-like core, but it's not Linux, it's not BSD, it's its own thing.
Yeah. I struggle to write a simple web app, and this guy can write a complete, yeah, well, so you know, it is what it is.
And it runs on real hardware too. That's the impressive thing.
Okay, so that about wraps things up. If you want to catch up with us, we do have a store. So if you want to get a t-shirt, a mug, or a hoodie with our logo on it, you can get it there. We have a Steam community. We're not that active on that, so it's that your mileage may vary if you want to join that. We're on Telegram, Matrix. We are on Discord. But again, I don't know how active it is. Probably the best thing for you to do would be to join the Telegram or the Matrix. We're on Twitter and we're on Mastodon. You can follow us on both of those platforms. Mainly what we do on those platforms is we just make an announcement when we have a new episode. So if you're expecting to tag us and for us to have a conversation with you, probably the best thing to do would be to go on Telegram or Matrix if you want to have a conversation with us. But if you just want to follow along and be notified when we release a new episode, you can do it on Twitter and Mastodon. If you have any feedback at all, or if you want to suggest some topic for us to discuss, or suggest a guest host, there's been times where people have reached out and said, hey, you should reach out to this person and have them on your show, that might be interesting. We're always open to those kind of discussions. You can email us show@linuxlads.com. All right, so I have been Connor and I've been joined by Mike and Amelie. Say goodbye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.